Thank you very much, Frank. Today I am a grateful recovering alcoholic dope fiend. My name is Stanley. And I say dope fiend because that's how I got high, you know. I was greedy. And I couldn't stop until the last drop or morsel was gone, you know. It was funny, I was with my granddaughter and wife at a restaurant just a couple of weeks ago, and we were having lunch. They had a lunch special, and a woman came in with her son, about 10 years old, and she ordered a drink, one of these colored drinks that was green with, I don't know, a little umbrella and what have you. And they had their lunch, and they talked. She took a couple of sips. She asked for the bill, paid the bill, and left. And half the drink was still there when she walked out. And I could not, and I happened to say to my wife, you see what she did? I mean, you know, so I know I got to keep coming. You know what I mean? I really do, because I could never drink like that, you know? A little about myself, how it was before I came into AA, I'm sure is not very different from most of you all. You know, I, for the most part, had a Catholic education. I went to Catholic grammar school and 2 years of Catholic high school, Rice High School in New York City, Christian Brothers of Island. And I was there through my sophomore year until they asked me to leave, you know. And when I left, I had started drinking, but sneak drinking for the most part. And my dad was a detective, New York City detective. And I went to public school, and it took me 3 more years to finish high school. I partied, the girls, the drinks, the fun, and I just didn't know how to contain myself, you know. I was very shy, very, not an introvert, but very skeptical about letting people know who I was and what was going on with me. And the alcohol seemed to free me up a little, you know. And that went through high school, but I was relatively successful, not so much with schoolwork, but with the girls, and fairly popular, but I started drinking more and more. And then I decided I would go away to college, and went to a small school in Ohio, and got down there probably a week earlier, thinking I was going to see the campus and go to the library and what have you. But when I arrived, it was who the drinkers were that were also there earlier. And I sort of teamed up with them. And that went on for 4 years. I failed everything. My parents were really disgusted with me. And then I got myself, just before I left, in a little trouble, which I'll talk a little bit about later, you know. But my self-esteem was really low. I remember an English class that I had enrolled in, a freshman English class. And the professor had a teacher's aide, beautiful girl from Mississippi. I forget the town in Mississippi, but very attractive. And I was like, wow, look at her. And he stepped out and let her run the class. And she was doing verbal biographies on each one of the new students. And when I got up there, and I hadn't been drinking that day, when I got up there, I just froze. I couldn't say anything, you know? And I don't know, I was just lost for words. And I think it was then that I realized, without this alcohol, I was going to be in some trouble, you know? And I really was, you know? excuse me, 1 minute. I stayed there 6 months over the year that I did. I was locked up. I was in the Xenia County Jail in Ohio for 6 extra months. Again, I'll talk a little about that later. But my drinking got to a point where I just couldn't take it anymore, you know. We had my uncle had left us a little country place up in the mountains that was really run down and what have you. And we'd go up there on weekends in the summer. And I would go up trying to fix up the place. We'd pick up floor sanders and my brother-in-law and I. And we'd had ordered sheetrock when we came up and what have you. And we were supposed to work on this house. And I'd have a half a gallon of Bacardi. I'd have a bundle of dope to the $2 bags back of heroin. And I had all my tools to go up there. And tell you the insanity of how it was. I remember we were sanding the floor, my brother-in-law and I, and we had a bag of cocaine in the bedroom. And I had the sander, and he went into the bedroom, and I didn't trust him, you know. And I wanted to make sure he didn't take more or finish it or whatever. And I went in behind him, but I left the sander running. And the floor was like, when we came back out, it was like, just like this, you know. And the sander was, you know, rubbing up against the wall. It was just insanity, you know. And somehow I lived like that and got to a point where I thought it was okay, you know, that this not so much was normal, but that it was okay, you know. And it was up there that I realized, I couldn't live like this, you know? And it was one morning, I was up all night sniffing coke and drinking, and the sun was coming up and I'm out on the stoop and I just started crying, you know? My wife came out and she said, "What's wrong? What's going on?" I said, I just can't do this. I just can't do this anymore, you know? And I think it was at that point that I realized I needed some help. And there was a show that used to come on in New York called Straight Talk. And I was watching it in bed, nursing a hangover the morning after this weekend. And they had as guests two recovering people. One was an MD, a doctor, and the other one was a registered nurse. And at that time, you know, my concept of a drunk or an alcoholic was a stumble bum down at the Bowery or whatever. And they caught my attention and I listened and they were talking about alcoholism and I started to identify, you know. I said, damn, you know, I felt that way. Wow, I felt that way. And at the end of the program, they flashed a number for AA Intergroup and I decided I'd call it, you know. And I did, and they told me that there was a meeting, a double meeting in my area that night, I think at 6 or 6:30 at Holy Rosary Church. And I decided to go. But I went to the liquor store first. I got a half a pint of Bacardi rum and took a couple of swigs and left the rest of the bottle in my car. And I sat down for the meeting. They asked if anyone was new. I said, I was just here trying to see what this thing is about. I didn't think I had a problem, but you know, I just want to see what you guys are doing. And the person who qualified was one of these barroom brawlers, you know, and he was talking about throwing chairs through the barroom window, punching guys. And I says, oh shit, this fucking thing's not going to work either, man, you know, because that's not how I drank, you know. And I couldn't wait for the meeting to end, you know. And as soon as they finished with the serenity prayer, I was on my way out. And a woman, a white woman, tapped me on the shoulder. And she said, Stanley, there's another meeting 5 minutes from now. Why don't you stay for that? Well, at this point, my self-esteem was so low that just the fact this woman remembered my name, okay, I couldn't tell her no. I just didn't know how to say no, you know. And I sat for that second meeting and, you know, I've been coming back for the most part ever since. Fella Tony from down the Living Now group down on St. Mark's shared. And again, I identified, you know. And once I did that, I started going to meetings, you know. I joined a home group. I got a sponsor. You know, used to go out on speaking engagements and things were going very well. This is 1983. Things were going well, you know. But I remember the first time I was gonna qualify, I was on, at this point, I was on methadone because I was detoxing from heroin. And it was under doctor's prescription, and 90 days were coming up, and my sponsor and I were supposed to go to a meeting where I was supposed to share for my first time, and I had my qualification half memorized, blah, 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 blah. And on the way, we're driving, and my sponsor said to me, Stan, you know, you may want to think about speaking tonight. And I said, what do you mean, man? Shit, I've been planning on this for weeks, you know. And he said, well, you know, you're on methadone, and, you know, it's, even though the doctor prescribed it, it's still a mood altering substance, you know. And I wanted to tell him to go fuck himself. I wanted to say, what, you know, are you nuts, man? You know, but he was my sponsor. And I said, well, you know, and I bit my tongue and I said, screw it. Okay, I'm not going to speak. And actually, he ended up speaking that night. And it probably was one of the better decisions, you know, I made over the last few years, you know. So anyway, as time went on, though, you guys had told me that, you know, half measures avail us nothing. And somehow I started getting bored with meetings, you know. My sponsor started taking on more sponsees. And, you know, he didn't have as much time for me anymore. At least that's what I thought, you know. And I start cutting back on my meetings, you know. And a few years later, my sponsor passed away from liver disease, you know, from hepatitis. Meanwhile, I started taking this negative inventory of people I was hearing at meetings, you know. He or she is not sincere. He talks program, but he doesn't work it. She contradicted herself because I remember the last qualification, she said something else, you know. And then I started questioning things from the big book, little things like recovered versus recovering and da 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 da. And then I heard a speaker one night say that he didn't get clean to spend the rest of his life in musty rooms, smelling cigarettes and drinking bad coffee. And he had got sober to live a normal life. And my disease jumped on that. It just jumped on that like white on rice, you know. I said, wow, yeah, I don't really need to make all these meetings, you know. And then gradually I started making like a meeting a week, a meeting a month, a meeting every 2-3 months, you know. And in around, I guess, 2005, 2006, we bought a retirement house down in North Carolina. And I always had talked to people in the fellowship, even when I wasn't making the meetings, you know, not regularly, but I would stay in touch with one or two people who were in recovery. And so I said I'd go to this meeting down in North Carolina in a little town called Calabash, where we had this place. And there are very few people of color there, you know. So that was one thing that, and then I never saw too many young, new people coming into this meeting, you know. And it seemed as though, and this was like 2005, most of the people there were older, but they knew or at least shared about knowing Bill or Bob or Abby, or one guy knew Dr. Silkworth. I mean, it was like, whoa. And I'd hear this, I mean, I started again, this is bullshit, you know, I can't do this. So I stopped going to meetings in North Carolina. In 2017, we decided to sell the place in North Carolina and move to the Virgin Islands, where I grew up with some friends here in New York who had settled there, you know. And if any of you know the islands, you know, drinking is, you know, a pastime. And I was playing Russian roulette. I realize that now with my recovery, you know. Thank God my higher power saw fit for me not to pick up a drink. But I was in the grips of the lion, believe me. They talk about staying with the herd. I was not only away from the herd, I was back in the woods and the lions were waiting for me, you know. So then COVID came up, and this is now March of 2000. And I was fearful that if COVID had broken out down in St. Croix, that I wouldn't be able to get back to the mainland here, you know. So I decided to leave St. Croix. So we left, we came back to New York. And for some reason, a friend called me a couple of days after I was back. And I told him, he says, are you making meetings? I said, nah, not really. He says, well, I got a buddy who's really enthusiastic about the program. Why don't you give him a call or hook up with him, you know? And I said, okay. So I called the guy and he started putting me on to, you know, all of these virtual meetings. And for some reason, I got on the bandwagon. My higher power saw fit for me to jump back into this thing, you know. But I had forgotten, you know, I had really forgotten that you guys were here to welcome me when I came back, and I just abandoned everybody, you know. And I said, you know, I do owe a debt. I do, you know. And I also have to remember that, you know, people who relapse are clean, you know, and people who relapse are sober, you know. So, and that was simple, but I just couldn't think it while I was down in the island, you know. So anyway, I came back, you know, and I, during COVID, I joined my old home group. I got a sponsor who had a sponsor. I'm currently doing all the 12 steps over again, you know, and I'm working with a guy now who's steeped in the steps, and we're going through the big book. I volunteer to do service. I chair a meeting at my home group. I repurchased all my literature. Well, for some reason, my literature just started disappearing. In between here and St. Croix, all I had was a 12 and 12, but all my, as Bob sees it, the big book, everything seemed to disappear, you know? And I speak to my sponsor or at least somebody in the program mostly every day, you know, without fail. And now I average 2 virtual meetings a day, you know? And since I returned, my life has changed dramatically, you know? But I wanted to talk about something that I only shared once at an AA meeting, you know? And I talked about this low self-esteem. When I was at college in Ohio, I was going out with a young girl from the local town. And I decided to share this at a meeting down at Perry Street in New York. And my interim sponsor, Phil Parker, was there with me. And he had suggested before the meeting, when you share, Stan, be very honest. And so I shared this incident. I got this girlfriend, and to gain some, I don't know, credence or acceptance with 2 of my friends, male friends, I talked this girl into sleeping with both of them, you know? And I'm not proud of this. I haven't shared it since then. I shared this at a meeting at Perry Street, the whole story, and a woman in the audience, a recovering alcoholic, screamed out, "You're not sorry. You're not regretful. I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your voice. You know, you're not sorry. You're not sorry you did that, you know." And I looked over at Phil, and, you know, he was just like, you know, just as surprised, I guess, as I was. And I don't know if any of you know Phil P, but, you know, his story's in the big book, which I didn't even know at the time, but he was no help either. So I'm saying, holy shit. So after that, I got a little gun shy, and I'm sure that had some influence on what I shared at meetings when I actually did go to meetings, you know. But I just want to say that since I've been back, and, you know, I've incorporated, or at least started to incorporate, the steps in my life has just been so much more fulfilling, so much more worthwhile, you know. I'm less judgmental of others, you know, and I have new people in my life today, and I know they care about me, and I care about them. And I never felt that sense when I first came around, you know. And a challenge to me today is trying to keep AA and NA, and I make both fellowships, by the way, at the center of my life, you know. In the past, it was, how do I fit meetings and AAA into my busy life, busy life in quotes. Yeah, right. Today it's, you know, how do I fit my busy life into AA and NA, you know? That's not to say that, you know, I don't have any challenges, you know. I had hepatitis C and I was going for checkup. I did the Harboni treatment and, you know, my viral load was zero. But they found a tumor on my liver. And November 30th of last year, the tumor was removed and they got all the cancer. It was malignant. But the doctor explained to me that there's a 2-year window that I probably will form more tumors. And if I do, the likelihood is that they will be malignant also because of the Hep C. And so I'm scheduled to take my second MRI in June 9th, actually. So, you know, that's preying on me. So it was set up that I was taking the MRI June 9th at 12:30 p.m. And I had the doctor's appointment to read the MRI at 3 o'clock. And I get a call 2-3 days ago from the doctor's office that the secretary tells me the doctor is going to be in surgery for the next week and a half after the 9th, and they have to postpone the reading until then. So I guess I'll be in suspense for, 9 days after this MRI takes place, you know. But I'm talking about it. I'm dealing with it. Another thing that has come up in my life, my wife of off and on over 50 years is... has been diagnosed with the early stages of dementia, you know, and that's heavy, you know. But I have people in the program who have spouses or had spouses, relatives, parents who had dementia, and they're very, very helpful, you know. I also belong to an Alzheimer's group that focuses on dementia and go to meetings there occasionally, you know. But I'm so confident that I'm going to get through this no matter what, because I have the program and you people in it, you know. And, you know, without the program, I don't know where I'd be right now, you know. I just don't know, you know. And I am just so grateful to be back. And I want to thank each and every one of you all for helping me stay straight today. Thank you for listening. I am a grateful recovering alcoholic dope fiend. My name is Stanley.